Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Talking Real to You. It's always good to be here and have an opportunity to talk with you. Talk with you about issues that you don't hear every day. Sometimes you can call them water cooler issues, but we're going to talk about it. We're asking you to take an opportunity and join us tonight. I am Dr. Lorenzo D. Smith, the host. And my co-host is Lauren D. Smith.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good night. I'm ready to start talking to you. Got a lot of good issues on the docket tonight. I'm ready to go ahead and get it started.
Hey, thank you, Lauren. It's good to have you back again. We're excited because this is our third opportunity to come before you. This is something very special because you're tuning in to the first I know father and daughter team that's going to bring you energetic conversation about political, social, economic, educational, financial, and just plain life issues. Your question is why Talking Real to You? Because your normal real talk shows are afraid of addressing issues that affect our daily lives, and they're just too plain. Our call-in number, we want to make sure you call in and talk with us, 347-857-4192. Then if you want to hear this show by web link, it is www.blogtalkradio.com/LDAlberto Smith Production. So we're just very excited about having this opportunity. You know, as we move forth in life, there's always issues that we need to address. So what we're going to do is that by giving you and what we have given you the call-in number, and I'll do it again, 347-857-4192. If you want to join in the conversation, press 1, and I will identify you by calling out the last 4 digits of your cell number or telephone number, and then we're going to ask you to tell us who you are and your location, and then we want you to just jump in and just enjoy yourself. Now, if you want to email and share your topics via email, that's LorenzaDSmith15@gmail.com. All right, Lauren, we're going to kind of get started tonight. We're going to look at education. And one of the things that come about in the discussion throughout our country is what's wrong with the public education system? And we just want to kind of look at it. Lauren, can you just kind of share you some thoughts in regards to what you think is wrong with the public education system?
One thing that I see as a problem in, I'm always in Montgomery Public Schools, so I'm going to go ahead and say what I see in Montgomery Public Schools is the lack of teachers trying to get to know their students. That plays a big part in the failure of our, I'm going to say, Montgomery Public School system, that teachers, it seems like a lot of these teachers are here just for a check. I know I've overheard students say that their teacher told them, you know, I got my degree, you get yours. Kids are not going to be successful when you have a mindset of me just trying to do the bare minimum of me just trying to meet the state requirements and not really educating these kids. So that's one thing that I see as a big, big problem is teachers are not communicating and are not gelling with the students.
And just to kind of just take that to another level, being myself 35.8 years in public education, I would have to say that what my co-host just shared with you is one of the concerns. We can't treat this field as just like clocking in at 7:30 and clocking out at 3:30 and nothing happening between that time. You just do like a robot. It takes you to go to another level. And when we're talking about education, you have to educate each child individually. We get a lot of professionals, and I've been around professionals, they always say, well, that's impossible. It's not impossible. Your choice to be in this field means that you have to go way beyond exactly just a normal area and try to find out more about that student in your class, because one of the big major problems that we spend our time focusing on is discipline. Discipline is at an all-time high in our schools now. The problems with discipline is at an all-time high, and something has to adjust to make sure we can have school. Let's not say that every one of the students that's in public school or in school are causing problems, but if it's that 5%, that 5% is too much. Recently, in the state of Alabama, there is an interim superintendent, state superintendent, Dr. Ed Richardson, and one of the things, a part of his platform was to create a school for students who have behavior problems. Now, the buzzword, and we're just going to keep it real because it's talking real, you know, is that going to be a school just for our young males who's creating a problem in the classroom? And I'm not saying females don't do that. Is it just going to be a school just for African-American males, and that might be saturated with some other races that's part of the public school system? But is that the best thing? Do we want to separate them? But we do want to address the problems that we're dealing with in public education in regards to discipline. And that's one of the things we was talking about. In regards to the follow-up with what Lauren was saying and to teachers adjusting, again, you have to be able to teach each one of those students individually. And you may have 15, 20, or 30 in your class, but each individual learns different. And the art and craft that you have of teaching makes you very unique that you can address every one of them problem. So that's what a teacher has to do. But they can't teach if there's not a complete effort from the top to the bottom to make sure the classrooms and the schools are safe, make sure we are in a position where we can spend whatever time, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, or 30 or 40 minutes teaching our children without constantly being disrupted about whatever behavior problems they may have. You know, I truly believe that some of our students, once we can identify, just don't have be giving you a problem behavior, I think they have behavior disorders. And those disorders need to be addressed. So we just want to share that thought with you in regards to that. It's kind of a follow-up what my co-host was talking about. And there are several other issues, and I'm going to kind of get this one started if you allow me to do co-host. The lack of adequate funding for public education. I attended a meeting on Monday night. And at that meeting, one of the things came up about the ad valorem tax that is used to pay for education and other public entities is at the possible lowest it can be required by state, which is 10 meals. And those 10 meals are available to take care within, we'll take in this area, try to take care of the schools and the students that we have here. So having a lack of adequate funding will create a problem not to address the needs. The facilities, and I rode around and I looked at several schools and I thought about how cold it was the last 2 weeks. And them young people have to go to that school when the doors open up and glass is everywhere. When you have windows everywhere, your possibility of having a climatic condition in that building to be good and comfortable is not good. So those are some of the things that need to be addressed, but having adequate funding to actually be able to take care of some of those things. We just have to make sure that happens, make sure the funding is available. And then the question about a lot of the individuals out there in the public is, let's make sure we use the funding correctly. Let's make sure we use it for the sake of making our system better, making the education system perform at its highest level. So that's one of the things that we have to convince, we have to sell our public on exactly what we're doing, because 10 meals include coming out of their taxes they pay, whether or not their children in attendance to those schools or the public school or not. If they're in the private school, they still have to pay the same tax that you pay. So that's one of the things we got to make sure we have the adequate funding and make sure we use that funding for the right thing in regards to public education. Co-host, you want to add anything else to what you may think is also wrong with public school system, public education?
I'm gonna take it a step further. I'm gonna just go ahead and go to the legislator that we have in office. Why don't, and to improve the funding for public schools and also for Medicaid in the state of Alabama, why don't we think about a lottery? Georgia has a lottery, and I don't think they have as many problems as we do when it comes to funding. I think that could be a solution, so we wouldn't have to we wouldn't find ourselves in debt as a state, because the legislature just started that. And I know one of the things they were saying was that they didn't know how they were going to get the budget approved. I've never heard of a state who cannot get funding approved for not only education but also Medicaid. How can you not get funding approved? Is it because we don't have the resources coming in to fund? Well, if that's the case, then yes, we need to establish a lottery. We need to get something that is bringing money into the state that can fund education. Because right now, a couple weeks ago, I think what was it came out? The AYP or something of
yes.
that nature, where we had failed
Average yearly progress. Average yearly progress. Yes.
Average yearly progress. If you looked at that list, I don't like to sound like I'm gonna go ahead and say it. Black schools were on the list that were failing. You had Minor in Birmingham, which is a black school that's failing. You had Wilmington down in Mobile failing. All the high schools in Montgomery County are failing. These are black schools that are failing. So we have to not only say that, we can take a step further. Public schools in Alabama are not failing. The black public schools in Alabama are failing. So that is something that we must attack and try to figure out, why are these black public schools failing?
And Coles, that's awesome what you just said. It's amazing when you talk about the lottery. You was talking about the lottery. Let me kind of add some thought with that and some data, you know. Looking at those states that may have lotteries surrounding the state of Alabama, Florida, we know they have the lottery. They're ranked nationally overall number six. Looking at Georgia, who's to the east of Alabama, they're ranked seven. Looking at Tennessee, that's to the north, they're ranked 22nd. Looking at to the west of Alabama, the state that's behind Alabama, which is Mississippi, they're ranked 48th. But just looking at other states that's in the southeastern part of the United States, Louisiana is ranked 15th. Kentucky is ranked 10th. South Carolina ranked 26th. North Carolina is 21. And you can go up the East Coast, like West Virginia is fourth. I'm sorry, ninth, and Virginia is fourth. But now you say, well, where is Alabama? You know, Alabama has improved a whole lot. I gave you some stats that was listed after some research and some data. Alabama, as I relate to a quote that was said by Jay Lindo. The quote was, Alabama is number one in football and 49th in public education. So, in essence, everybody see Alabama as the bottom of the scale. But it's not as gloomy as I'm saying what Jay Leno said. That was back in 2011. And since then, as of 2017, some numbers was done, and they put them in six different categories. And the numbers I read off for those other surrounding states, that some of them have lotteries and some of them have casinos, even though they have casinos in Mississippi, but all the other states have lotteries. Alabama is ranked 30th. So it's not 49th, but in the last 6 or 7 years, we have vaulted from 49th to 30th. So we're making job gains. You got school choice, and a lot of people don't, the tax credit for school choice, we don't agree with it. But then again, if anything allows our young people to be successful, then we ought to be real excited about having that opportunity to make it possible. As my co-host was saying about how education is lagging so far behind, one of the key areas, even though Alabama is ranked 30th, that concerns both of us, because we are educators and many of you, is that Alabama is ranked 43rd in the nation for a chance for success. That means our children is almost at the bottom, seven states behind them are being successful. And that's 42 states in front of them. Is that a good place to be? Is that what we want? Do we want our young people to have that percentage of close to failing and not being able to succeed? And that's based on information given in the area of standardized tests, the effort to reduce poverty gap, the graduation rate, and student success. So do we want our state to be there? Unless, if we don't, we need to voice our opinion to our legislature in our area, whether it's our representative or whether or not that's our senator in the state of Alabama, and say we need to do better. We want to do better, and we have some ideas to do better. I want to share with you all, I went to a legislative council meeting on Monday night. And one of the things I encountered with the representative that was there of District 77, Pat McClellan, he's doing a wonderful job. But he was sharing some things about we need funding, we need to make sure we do better, but we at the minimum level, I can applaud those educators and those young people who are meeting the graduation rate, but to be ranked 43rd ought to concern you in regards to chance of success. Now, in looking at those numbers now, we're positive in some other areas. In standardized and achievement, we're 13th. So that means we're moving in the right direction. So it should concern you. This is the state of Alabama. We're not just talking about Montgomery. And my co-host alluded to it. And I'm going to just let my co-host jump back in here with some thought in regards to her beliefs in regards to what she's aware of about where we're failing with our young people, because I know she's around young people. So my co-host, can you kind of jump in and see how that chance for success is really seen when you're around those young people?
Here you go. It's no way that a child should sit in an English class for how long is a block, an hour and 30 minutes, and they get around me and they act like they haven't been to school all day. The way that they speak, the way that they do mental math is terrible. That affects people's lives. If you cannot read and add, you are not productive to society. If you can't read, you can't fill out a job application. If you can't do math, you will not stay at the job. That's one thing that carries on people's lives. It's not the biology part, the history part. Those are the two subjects that I see that we as African Americans, I'm gonna go ahead and say African Americans, are lacking in the public school. We have to teach our children something that can carry on 6-7 years down the road, not just something to graduate high school. And that's what the interim superintendent said. He said these kids are not equipped to do anything when they graduate high school. Basically, we're just passing them along, and that is a failure to the children. That is a failure to your child. One thing that's also a failure to your child that parents need to speak up about, your child comes home from school and tells you they do not have homework. You went to school for 8 hours a day. You should come home and do something. Or the one that kills me the most, we did it in class. You were supposed to be learning in class. Why would you be doing homework in class? We have to become concerned parents, concerned grandparents, concerned aunties, concerned coaches, concerned citizens for our children's education.
And my coach is just hitting it on the head tonight. I'm going to say, you know, kudos to you because you're hitting it from a very practical point of view because it is takes a whole village to raise a child. And I think if we continue on the flight we're on, it's a good chance that we will continue to produce inadequate individuals to perform any other job that's required for them. The goal, I truly believe, our education process should be is to prepare our young people to be productive citizens. But not being able to read and comprehend what you read, you can't fill out an application for a job. You cannot read. The doctor said you need to take this prescription to Walgreens instead because you can't read. You over at CVS. You can't be able to count money. And our economic system is truly, whether people agree or disagree, it's one of the best economic systems it is. In our system, you work hard, you receive the benefit. But if you can't count your money, then you're going to be lost. So all of these little things, you know, 30 years ago, and people don't want me to go that far back, but I'll go back because I know what occurred back then. You know, there was a governor that came up named Governor James, and he was talking about the three R's, read, write, and arithmetic. And everybody talking about, that sounds so country. But the truth of the matter, all they actually do is to be able to read, comprehend, be able to use vocabulary words, be able to compose a sentence, you know, clear enough so people can understand you. Be able to spell words, build your vocabulary way beyond the third grade. We have to make sure we do that. And then be able to count and be able to do the levels of math and, you know, and writing. I think the sense of manuscript have been taken out of our education system. Students are printing their name. And that's something could be helpful, not just, and I say this, not just through the system, but the parents ought to require that you be able to sign your name. You ought to do a manuscript because we're not accepting X's. We're not accepting printing of names when you're supposed to be putting a signature down there. We're self-printing when it say print, but if you're not able to comprehend, you'll be printing on both spaces. So this is something we need to address. And like I said, we're talking real topics here. If you don't like what we're saying, that's the way life is. We just want to share it with you. We're going to attack those life issues, so just plain life issues. And education is one of them. So we want to share this information with you so we can make sure you, if you want to join in, let me say this before we move forward. If you want to join in, just call 347-857-4192. And if you want to begin to add to the conversation, just press 1, and then I'll get you on the air, and I'll call out the last 4 digits of your telephone or cell number. And then from that point on, you identify yourself, who you are, and where your location is, and then you'll join in the conversation. So this is where we are in regards to where we see education. I'm going to kind of start with this other one. And we talked about one thing within those categories of success for individuals would be that category of chance for success. You know, that's a really, really subject that we need to address. That's one of those subjects we need to address. The reason why I say that is, as we said a little earlier, as well as my co-host said a little earlier, we need to prepare our young people to be successful. You know, there are some things happening. Last week we had two guests on here we interviewed. One of them was a career coach with the Montgomery Public School System, and the other one was a CEO or a nonprofit organization she's working toward. They call it Inspire to Inspire. She gave you her story. The career coach shared some things with her. We always talking about, oh, they got to make all A's and B's, but we also have to be able to learn to use our hands too. We got to be able to be in a position to be trained, successful. So workforce development is a thing that's being talked about, and it was shared with us about some of the things that we need to make sure we're in support of. So that's a chance for success. Co-host, you want to add anything else to talking about our public education system before we move to some specific things in regards to that?
I just say one thing. Montgomery Public School has done an amazing job with not only pushing, you know, college after high school, but also picking up a trade, also being able to use your hand. And I think that's a great tool to give young people, is to say, okay, we know everybody's not going to go to college, but for those of you who will not be attending, we're going to give you another option. So you can also be productive when you leave college, because it's a lot of kids who graduate high school who sit around here, and I see them walking in Walmart, and I ask them, hey, what you doing now? Oh, nothing. It's no excuse for your child to be doing nothing when I'm saying they have to go to college, but encourage them to get a job. Go to school to pick up a trade. Enlist in the military. Find some ways to be productive in society. That's all that I ask. As parents that have kids in school, instill in your kids to teach for them to be productive in society. That's it. If you go to school for 8 hours and you do your work, you're being productive in society. You graduate, pick up a trade, go to college, enlist in the military, you're being productive in society. You have productive citizens, you have less trouble, and you have less overcrowding in prisons.
Well, yes, that is awesome for my co-host. She's sharing some very fruitful thoughts on that. Again, our call-in number is 347-857-4192. Again, press 1 if you want to join in the conversation. Then we will identify with the last 4 digits of your cell or telephone number, and then we will ask you to tell us who you are and where you're located. We're at the point that we take a little break here, about 2 or 3 minute break. So we're going to put some music on while we take this break. Then we come back. We still got some hot topics to address. So just hold on to Talking Real to You. And we're going to come back in about, I'm quiet because in about 3 minutes we're going to come back. So we want you to stay tuned and join in the discussion. Prepare yourself to be able to share some thoughts with us. So we're gonna take a break.
Nobody pray for me. It been a day for me. Yeah, yeah. Your
down. Be humble. Sit 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 down. Who that thinking that he frontin' on that man? Get the off my stage. I'm the same man. Get the off my ass. That ain't right. I'm so, so sick and tired of the Photoshop. Show me something natural like Afro on Richard Pryor. Show me something natural. I wanna feel some stretch marks. Then to take you down right on your mama's couch in polo black. Hey, this is way too crazy. Hey, you do not amaze me. Hey, I blew cool from AC. Hey, over much as page me. Hey, I don't fabricate it. Hey, most of y'all be faking. Hey, I stay modest about it. Hey, she elaborates.
All right, we're back with you. We're talking real to you. And we again want to address some other topics. Again, our call in number is 347-857-4192. I am Dr. Larissa D. Smith, the host, and my co-host is Lauren D. Smith. And we have had an exciting first half of the show. We had some real strong topics in regards to education. We're going to come back with a few more topics. We still want you to call in, but if you just want to listen to the show, go to the web link, and that's www.blogtalkradio.com/LDAlberto Smith Production. All right, co-host, we're going to get into another topic, and the topic is, should public schools use certain criteria to develop their enrollment? Example, magnet schools.
Yes, I do believe public schools should use certain criteria to develop their enrollment. Magnet schools is an amazing example. I attended a magnet school. It was probably, magnet school really gave me the tools that I needed when I went to private school. So, and my sister graduated from a magnet school. So I see that as a great way to develop their enrollment.
And just kind of add to that, you know, the magnet school being a assistant principal of a magnet school, I saw that, yes, we may have had certain criteria to get those students in there, but those students was from all areas of the city of Montgomery. We are a product of our environment, and if we only socialize with individuals on the east side or the north side, or the west side, or the south side, then we don't have a chance to kind of experience things a little different. It's where it's a cross-cultural thing, and it gives them a chance to kind of have some goals set. You know, one thing about magnet schools, you know, the incentive is to get in, and the other incentive is to stay there. And that's something I kind of stress when I managed to become a principal of a traditional high school, or worked in a traditional, as an AP at a traditional middle school, then I was a principal of traditional high school. Taking that idea of making it exciting for the students to come to school. And when they come to school and they see that they can be successful in school, they have a great opportunity of being successful in life. You know, I personally believe that everything starts at home. And we have to prepare our young people at home before they even get to school, whether it's in the primary years or early years or before they leave home in the morning time. They have to be prepared. So the goal is to have better people looking at all avenues. That way we're going to develop quality students. And that's something we want to make sure is shared with everybody, because it's important that we have those young people ready to go, those young people willing to follow whatever rules and regulations you have, and the incentive is that, yes, the magnet school says if you can't follow the rules, you can't stay here. And that's understandable. That's why I say, regardless of where you are, what community you come out, when you have to adjust to whatever environment and there's the incentive of being there and being a part of it, I have seen it work for everybody. So the magnet school is a great opportunity. And for Montgomery, when they first came up with it, I was one of them that was a little bit challenging it because I thought it was just taking our best students from the regular traditional school and just put them in one school by themselves. Now, since it was just not all academic, academic was a major part. And if the question that you may have is say, well, they got criteria here, but you know, Montgomery have several magnet schools and all of them are not just focus on academic. Yeah, they have the Baldwin and the Lamp, which is an academic inclined school, but you have other schools that are like Brew Tech, which is focused on techno aspects of it. And it requires you to maintain that grade point average as a standing C plus and above, but it requires you to excel higher than a B and a B plus and an A in that magnet area. Or it might be BTW magnet, which is dealing with the performing arts, you know, and they have an opportunity to excel there. So it's an opportunity. Yes, there are criteria. You have to have criteria for everything to make sure we can meet that goal of a chance for success for each and every one of our students. Co-host, you want to add something to that?
Yeah, magnet schools are a great way to better your skills. So whatever you believe that you will be best at when it comes to you going to college, that's a great way for magnet schools. Like BTW was a school for performing arts. So if you want to be an actress, a dancer, a singer, a performer, that's a great school for you to go in and find your path. And also Blue Tech is the same way. Blue Tech with technology in the medical field. So I think you need schools like that in this day and time just to cater to kids who want to focus more on that. And I'm saying they don't focus on academics because they do, but they push their magnet. That's what they call whatever they choose to do is a magnet. They push their magnet a little more. And I've seen the success that they have on students after graduation.
And that's outstanding right there. Again, our call-in number is 347-857-4192. If you want to join in the conversation, press 1, and it will identify you the last four digits of your cell or telephone number. Then once you get on the air, we ask you to identify yourself and where you're calling from. We're saying there are so many positive things with a magnet school, but are there any negative things? Are magnet schools negative? And that's a question we're going to put for discussion. Are magnet schools negative? I'm going to start off with this because my co-host was handling that real well. You know, it is if you just believe that. Well, one of the things that I think that is negative about magnet school is that every school should be, to me, a magnet school. That was my thinking in the beginning. Now I believe that there should be a certain point that you have to cut off because of the space. You may not have the space for it. But I also think that there should be some form of a magnet over at that high school. And I think Carver High School had a field of magnet over there that kids, students are able to go over the cars, even though the number would be a negative thing where you can only take 300, you can only take 400, you can only take 500, maybe negative. That means some students out of 30,000 students, somebody's going to be left out. But unfortunately, if your traditional schools are being allowed like they are to have some form of a magnet program as well, so your child to have an interest in working electrical in that form, they can get an opportunity to go over there to that school, like having particularly that career tech center called Impact. Impact is available, and to a sense, everybody that wants to go in that area is just like a magnet area. If you choose to go into that area, which is Impact, we have some outstanding individuals working over there, outstanding students, administrators, and I do want to say that, and all the schools do. But we want to say that that's a form of getting a student or giving a child a chance to succeed. So that's really what we look at. Coles, you have anything in regards to some negative things you've heard about magnet schools that you want to share with our listeners?
Well,
Not so much of a negative. It's just a lot of people say some magnet schools are way more competitive, not really learning, but their child is really competing with the next person. And I think that's the only downfall I've really heard about magnet schools, that it's more of a competition at some, and then some is more relaxed and laid back, but at some is more of a competition. You're trying to outbeat the next man. And that's not really healthy for a child between the ages of 14 and 18 in a public school setting or in a school setting, period, is to have to compete like that. So that would be my only negative. And also, I do believe that they need to put some kind of magnet in every school. Now, I'm not talking about go all out like Blue Tech does and make you have to do this for your magnet, but introduce something that a child likes, or introduce something that you feel as an administrator or as administration that this school could benefit from in the area that it's in, the kind of kids it produces, things like that. Now, that I think that could work in public schools.
That's awesome, awesome. Okay, our next topic, and we're going to jump into it because, you know, we want to keep within our schedule. And this is one that has really had our officials and our leaders in education buzzing, and it is, the topic is, should charter schools be allowed to be formed in Alabama? And I'm going to kind of lead in this one right here. Charter schools is something that has been implemented per se, and I can say there's other states, but I can more relate more to Florida. In South Florida, charter schools are just everywhere. You have a charter for every traditional public school or even magnet school, you have a charter school. And understanding exactly what goes along with the charter school, because a lot of times all we getting from our education figureheads and political figureheads and those leaders we have is that it's taking money from that school. But we have to keep in mind exactly how our physical process works. We got to understand, for a child attending school every day, there's money in place for that school, for that school system, for that child in regards to addressing at-risk situation. Money is in place for that child, and it's based on the child. So when I hear that argument from a lot of individuals saying, well, by starting a charter school, which will be a public school, let's put that stamp on it. It will be, it's taking money from the other public school. Truly, truly, I have to totally not agree with that, because if the money follows the child, if he stays in that school, the money will be there. If he leaves that school, the money will follow him. That's one student, one less student that you have to count and figure out in your account, and it's not taken away from your chance for education, but it's a chance for a child to succeed. It's a chance for that, and I just want everybody to kind of keep that in mind when we start have our argument about money and the money being taken away from the school system. And I'll probably get some calls from certain people, texting, talking about, well, that ain't right. That is right. The problem that we have is that we're afraid and concerned, many of our superintendents and our finance people, is that the money will follow the child. Just on the other side, let me put the flip side to that, and my daughter mentioned it a few minutes ago. Yes, she attended, both of my daughters attended a private school. Now, I'm still paying taxes. I'm doing it in the money based on the censor numbers every 10 years, that money still in certain specific things going to go there. Might not go toward enrollment, but it'll go to at risk, because that child is still considered to be at risk, because wherever his zone school is, the money still stay there. So one of the questions that comes out of all of the discussion is, you know, the money is going to be taken away and we're not going to be able to function. It's hard for me to understand that when you set a budget up, and the budget is set up that for a school system, it has to be he have at least $1 million in reserve. And you think that's going to take away from that because there that charter school started in Montgomery in 2018 going to take a lot away from you? It's not. When that only 326 slots that's available in that school, come on, that's not going to take. What we have to do is make sure we understand that anytime we can offer our young people a chance for success, we have to look at it and not be critical, concerned about, okay, we're going to lose this. We're going to lose if the child is there not performing, because if he's not performing and the parents are not comfortable, they're going to find a way to put their child over in where? The private school. So why not enhance our public schools, keep the funding in, and they bring students back from the private school to the public school setting through charter school? Now, that's my discussion on that. And any other discussion on that?
I got one thing to say. You focus a lot on the money part, but I have a lot to say about the success part of it. Your child is not succeeding in the school system that they are in now. So why wouldn't you support a change? Why wouldn't you support something different if you want your child to succeed? That's my whole thing with the arguments. People are arguing, in my opinion, foolishness. Do you want your child to succeed or not? Yes. Okay, well, let's find a new way for your child to succeed, because apparently the way that is established right now is not working. So how about we go an alternate route and see if that works? That's my whole argument about it. Let's try at least one, and let's see if that's an improvement. That's it.
Yeah, and great discussion on that right there. Okay, we're going to move to our other hot topics doing politically, the immigration issue. The issue of the deferred action for childhood arrivals. That's something that's become a political issue. It's a hotbed to the point where we was not able to pass a budget because partisan politics was being played on both sides. One, the part of the bill in the budget was excluding deferred action for childhood arrival, and the other part wanted it in there, so they went back and forth. So we end up not playing, being able to pay, have our budget put together so we can pay our federal employees, because I actually was up to VA, and I heard some of them say, well, they said they're going to come up with some way to pay us. If you know that means no funding is going to be in your home. You could blame anybody you want to blame, but it is all about bipartisan politics instead of bipartisan. We want this. We ain't gonna vote. We know you ain't got enough vote. You can't carry this. And the truth of the matter, who's suffering? Possibility your parent, your home, is suffering because if they work with the federal government, I used the VA. That was not going to be checks given out to them. Certain people would receive funding, or they was going to defer, and they're going to do some other things. So is it a good idea to use that kind of strangulation or use that kind of thought process when you're dealing with trying to have a budget? And we got to do what we need to do with what we have in this country. All right, co-host, you can add to that.
The immigration issue of DACA, it was President said, I think it was last week or the week before that, this is what he said. He said, I will give you a trade. I will sign DACA. So I will let DACA continue if you guys agree to build my wall. No, that's not going to work. He's playing tit for tat. It's not going to work. The DACA issue really wasn't an issue. I personally did not see a problem with it. Why you wouldn't want to keep the program, It's dumb. I'm just saying what it is. It's dumb. You want a wall built for no reason to keep out people who come to this country for a better life, as we all know people come to America for as a second chance and a better life, better way to make money, things of that nature. So you're basically telling people, no, we're going to deny you for no reason. You have not given a logical, educational, or any reason that makes any sense to anybody why you want to keep these people out of our country. So that's my issue with this. He's trying to give a trade. I trade you this and trade you that, and it's not gonna work. So.
Exactly. Well, that's all right, co-host. That's awesome, Laura. That's awesome. All right, we're going to move to the next topic because we're at about 9 minutes with our time left. The protest by the NFL players taking a knee. 49% of the people thought the athletes protesting during the national anthem was doing wrong. Is any thought on that? And 46% thought it was okay. So you had a percentage that just didn't matter to them. So, Lauren, you'd like to kind of share anything in regards to that?
Yes, the protest by the NFL players taking the knee had nothing to do with the NFL players protesting the national anthem itself, but to bring awareness to social injustice that was going on in America and all around the country. I think if people would have sat down and actually talked to people who were supportive of players taking the knee, they would have, you know, figured out that it was no disrespect to the national anthem. I know plenty of people who have served overseas, and I would never in my life want to disrespect anything that they have done to fight for our country. So if I sat there and I was protesting, it couldn't have been any harm. I thought that a lot of people, you know, they just saw people being defiant. And more important, they saw black people being defiant, so they automatically assumed disrespect instead of trying to figure out why we were kneeling and why we wanted to protest social injustice. That should not be why we want to protest social injustice, because social injustice is what social injustice. So I'm glad that this probably kind of moved to the back end, because it was kind of taken away from the other things that were going on. So.
And the thought, and we appreciate you, Lauren, getting that thought. And this is what we call spirited conversation, energetic. We're going to kind of move forward, and there's some issues that we wanted to talk about, but, you know, our time is always, you know, such having so good conversation, and you just kind of move forth, and you can't get everything tonight, so that's why we plan on being back next week. Let me take this opportunity to give you that call-in number, because you do have time to call in, and that's 347-857-4192. So, you know, you get a chance to call in, and once you call in and I see that you have a question and want to add the conversation, we'll ask you to press 1, and then we'll call out the last 4 digits of your number and then ask you to identify yourself. And the last thing is 2 things we want to talk about in the next 2 or 3 minutes, a business venture, and I want our co-host to share her entrepreneurship and what she's doing, and share if, you know, you want her to work with you in that area. Lauren, you can share that with us.
Okay. Me and my sister, we've come up with this cool clothing line called Cool Kids. We're in the developing stages of it, so I think we will be putting out a couple pieces within the next couple weeks, just so you could get a gist of what we're trying to do. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that's coming soon. So continue to listen to the show for more information about that. We're looking forward to putting out all of our products and everything that we have in the spring. So we're looking at I really want to put it out on my birthday, so May the 8th. We're going to look to put out all of our products. Also, I'm in the stages of trying to customize kicks. Customize kicks means basically I turn your old, busted, rusted up sneakers to some new fire tennis shoes so that you can wear out and people can say, where did you get those? And you just say, Cool Kids Customs.
And how can they contact you?
Contact me on Facebook if you're interested in getting your customs at Lauren, Lorien Smith. Just hit Messenger and message me. Send me a picture of your shoes. Send me what color you want me to, you know, tie your shoes, what color do you want me to customize your shoes, what all you want on them, and I will get back to you with the price and everything else.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome. That's one of our sponsors who wanted to share their thoughts with you, and young entrepreneurs who's doing things. And they are African-American young ladies who come up with an idea, and they're moving forward, and they really need you to take time to go on Facebook and let them know that you're interested in helping them with their business. And that's what we do, support black business. So this show is all about economics as well. The last thing we want to talk about is the fundraiser. It's a local fundraiser for Officer Carlo Taylor. And I just want to read off some information from Angela Taylor, his mother. She said, just a reminder that Saturday, February the 3rd, will be another plate fundraiser for her son, Officer Carlos Taylor, 11 a.m. until the menu will be mullet, tilapia, chicken, wings, fried salad, spaghetti, baked rolls, dessert, drinks. It is all for $7. And there will be at 7148. This is the location, 7148 Breckenridge Drive, Copperfield Subdivision. Now, you can make sure you go to Angela Taylor page on Facebook and just kind of give her your contact, get her contact information, because she'll be able to communicate to you through the message center or just share some comments and just give her your number or ask for her number, and she'll get it and she'll post it on Facebook. So keep just support that. That will be Saturday at 11 o'clock. And again, the address is 7148 Breckenridge Drive, Copperfield Subdivision. So let's go out and support Officer Carlo Taylor, who was involved in an accident about a year ago, and he's been working hard. God is good. He's been blessed. The family's being blessed in a new home, and it's awesome. And it's glad. I just feel overjoyed. My $50 is still on the table. Be given to them, and we'll do that Saturday. Then I'm challenging everybody else to do the same. Whether it's specifically, I use my fraternity brothers of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated and the ladies of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. Make contact Ms. Taylor, or either you email me and I'll give you the telephone number to call Ms. Taylor, whether you here or far. All right, we want to close the show out now. And Lauren, you have anything you want to leave with these important listeners?
I just want to say thank you guys for tuning in tonight. I can't wait to come back next week. I was a little under the weather tonight, so I'm glad that I was able to hold up for this hour to spend it with you guys. You guys have a blessed rest of the week, and see you next week.
So, that's awesome, Lauren. And I just want to say tune in next week to Talk It Real to you. It's 8 o'clock Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. The call-in number is 347-857-4192. And also on Wednesday night with my four co-hosts Talking Sports Plus. It's at the same time and the same number, which is 347-857-4192. Or either go to the web link, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/LDAlberto Production. We'll look forward for you calling in next Wednesday or listening to the show next Wednesday and Thursday. Have a wonderful night. Again, if you want to email me, email to get that information about Officer Carlo Taylor. Do that. We look forward to talking to you next week. You have a wonderful night and an awesome weekend. So we say good night.
Drama in our lives. With a great track pumping, everybody jumping. Go ahead and twist your back and get your body bumping. I told you, leave your situations at the door. So grab somebody and get your ass on the dance floor.